Tuesday, March 3rd, 2009. We're waiting for a couple more members, but we do have a pretty extensive list that we'd like to get through today. So if it's okay, we would invite Senator Bach to come forward with Senate File 814, and we'll begin the discussion. Welcome to the committee, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members. We've talked about health insurance and how it relates to the cost of providing for education in our K-12 schools for a number of years. I think I've voted for every proposal that Education Minnesota has brought forward. We've sent some bills to the governor. They've got vetoed. This is an effort on my behalf, I think, to kind of continue the discussion. I'm not under some illusion that this bill, as it's drafted, is going to end up somehow on the governor's desk. I realize there's a lot of people against it. A lot of people have come to see me that don't like it. And change is hard. But this came to me from the school district that I live in, and I have with me the superintendent from that school district that could probably speak to the challenge that they've had negotiating their most recent teacher's contract. And let me just kind of close before introducing him and just say we need as a state to figure out how we can create a bigger health insurance pool of public employees. And I would just kind of challenge people to think big. I don't frankly see, I think that the environment is such in this economy that we should think about emerging from this session with one pool for all state, local, and school district employees. I mean, that's what we ought to, I think, try to accomplish. That's a big change, I realize, but we have to find some way to pool larger groups to try and find some additional efficiencies. But, Mr. Chairman, my school superintendent is here, and I'd like him to give him an opportunity, as long as they brought me the bill, as to what's going on in my own personal school district at home.
Perfect. And before you go ahead, Superintendent, just let the record note that a quorum is present. And with that, welcome to the committee, Superintendent.
Thank you very much for allowing me to come in and speak today. I'm here to speak on behalf of, name for the record is Charles Rick, Superintendent of St. Louis County Schools. Again, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak about this. And given our school district, we have been trying to find ways to manage our health care costs, at the same time maintain a level of benefits that is, I think, good for both the school district and the employees. While we haven't settled our teacher contract for the past 2 years, one of the sticking points has been, besides salaries, would be health insurance and finding ways to when we receive our new monies from the state, where that money is spent. Is it spent on salaries? Is it spent on health insurance? And from looking at that and looking at different plans that are available to us, including when this idea came up, we looked at this plan, for example, and just kind of ran our numbers based on this plan that you had, the state plan, and there would be a difference, a savings for the school district, if these are low plan calculations, of about $558,000 from what we're currently paying. Or if we even went a little bit higher and used like a 100% single and 90% family, that amount jumps up to $785,000 savings. So what it tells me is that we have more work to do in our health insurance plan, is not just on premiums, but also on the benefits that we're looking at. And when I see numbers like this, as a superintendent and knowing how tight money is today in these economies, this becomes real relevant to me. And I also look at where have our rates gone in the past few years in terms of our usage. And we're part of the Northeast Service Cooperative, and our increases this past year is 12.8%. But the previous 2 years when we were down around 3 and 4%. And prior to that, then it was back up around 10 to 15%. So I don't think we're out of line with the other districts that are in our area, maybe statewide. So what we're asking is to be considered as an option as like the bill suggests, to take this into account considering 2142.
Thank you, Superintendent. Any further comments that you'd like to make, Senator Bach?
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the committee's intent is. At some point along the way here, I expect that somebody's going to do some work on one health care bill emerging out of this legislative session, and I don't know if it's going to get done here or if it's going to get done in the local government committee or where exactly. I know they've requested the bill. I don't know what the chair's thought was about where kind of all that work would get done.
Group insurance plan.
I know there's other bills, I understand, being heard today.
Okay.
Some
of the
state employees.
Senator Metzen.
Have you, Mr. Superintendent, looked at the number? The Joint State Employee Health Plan, did you look at the numbers? And obviously I think you'll save some money because it's a bigger pool. Or is that correct? Or
yes. Well,
Superintendent Rick.
From looking at this plan, you're talking about the current plan that I'm referring to?
Well, whatever the bill says here, school districts permitted to join the state employee health plan. Now, what is that, Council? Is that the state, all other?
Mr. Chairman, that's the, Senator Metzen, that's the plan that our state employees are in, that we as legislators are in.
Okay.
So that's the plan we're talking about.
So you would, the idea is to obviously join a bigger pool, so to speak, and take advantage of strength in numbers. Is that probably the answer?
That really is the intent. And I know one of the, and I've discussed this with the bargaining unit that negotiates the state plan, and I know there, I understand taking on uncertain liabilities. You know, I've been very involved in the building trades health insurance plan in Duluth. A number of the building trades crafts are in there. That's where my insurance has been for the last 33 years, and they're self-insured. And I understand reserves, and I understand also one of the issues is potentially one of these school districts that come in here may have some pre-existing conditions that they might have an experience rating higher than maybe what the where the pool is now, and it could add some cost. But you know, I think we have to find a way to get over those kind of obstacles. I mean, and I think it starts with every time we hire a state employee, we take on unknown risk in our health in our state health plan. We don't know if they have some pre-existing conditions, some members of their family do. Every time a state employee gets married, we take on a spouse, maybe with some children, and there are likely some pre-existing conditions there. I mean, I think we're already assuming some risk. And does potentially this add some on the upside, on the downside? Absolutely, it does, but that's not something that we don't currently experience.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bach. And Senator Bach, just to give you just a little background, Senator Erickson Ropes and I, not last summer, but the summer before, had a bill to create a statewide pool that basically was not just for teachers but open to anyone who wanted to join it. And so we had a real education about the pools that are existing right now in the state, as well as the whole concept of things like adverse selection. And the problem that I see with your bill, the primary problem, if you were to take all of the school districts in the state and put them into this pool, regardless of, I mean, they didn't have a choice to go in or go out, but they just all went in, you might have a slight raise in, you know, depending on what their experience rate is as a whole group versus the people who are in CGIP now. But it probably wouldn't be a real big difference, and you'd have some economies of scale, and, you know, there'd be some pros and cons to doing it. But the way you have the bill crafted, schools get to decide if they want to come in or not by district. And there I would see you would have a huge negative impact versus the rates that are being paid now. Because what will happen is there's so much disparity right now among school districts. The way we've set things up now, you have some school districts where if they've had a lot of people or a percentage of people who've gotten sick, their rates have gone up. And as their rates go up, then people bail out and go get it in the private sector if they don't have to belong, and then they go way up. And so those people who have really outrageous rates now in comparison to normal are going to want to come in here, whereas the ones that maybe have real young and healthy people and might even be paying rates under CGIP aren't going to want to, and they're going to self-select in and out of here depending on what kind of bid they might get on the outside market. And from what we learned in this pool, that just never works. You know, somehow they have to all be in to make this work rather than making it an optional thing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I absolutely understand that. And I hope at the end of this session that we've accomplished what you just described. But I didn't know there was another health insurance bill being drafted, that somebody else was working on it. This really is just a piece of legislation to try to get us started on the discussion, because there has to be some reforms in the way we deliver health care to public employees. We can find a cheaper way to do it if we all are willing to, I think if we're willing to create a bigger pool. And I did start by saying I don't expect this to land on the governor's desk, but I do hope that it initiates the conversation. And then, like I said, I didn't know there was other bills coming. I'm just trying to get a conversation going here about a significant reform in health care for public employees. If somebody wants to amend it and make it mandatory, you're heading in the direction I'd like to go. But then there is the issue going forward. It doesn't end there. You got the issue of, you know, the state employees have built a reserve, and if we're going to put other people in, how do we then, do they bring some reserve with them, or how do we, I mean, there's a number of issues surrounding making it mandatory and putting a large number of people in as it relates to the reserves that have been pooled by current participants. So I don't pretend to, I mean, some committee is going to do a lot of work on this if we as a legislature decide we want to pursue this. I don't pretend that it's ready to go.
Senator Vandiver?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson kind of answered my first question, but I didn't. Didn't Senator Salzman, hasn't she been trying to get a study on the impact of bringing the teachers into the state health plan? And maybe that isn't such a bad idea to go forward with that.
Senator Sharon.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I guess I was just thinking there is a study that Senator Sharon had brought, but maybe that's a different thing than the one you're talking about.
Right, sure. We'll have to look into it. I think that Senator Bach, just so the committee knows, and I don't want to speak for Senator Scheid, will be here shortly. She has another bill up in another committee, but I believe it was her intent to get the conversation out, listen to the testimony on Senate File 814. We're also going to hear Senator Dibble's proposal, Senate File 915, and I think at that time the committee can take action or we'll have that discussion, so that helps at all. But I think that, Senator Bach, we appreciate you bringing this forward because we know there's a real need.
Mr. Chairman, there's a real issue out there, and this is just I would describe it as introduced as a local bill on behalf of my school district. Out of our school districts in the state, they are the only one that has not settled their current contract. There's about 7 months, five months left. Largely the reason is the health care issue is why they can't seem to come to an agreement with Education Minnesota. So we have to have a discussion about that.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bach. And I would totally agree with you. In the meetings I've had with school districts in my area, I've been told by teachers that they're more concerned about this issue than what we do with their salary, because we just take away with one hand and, you know, and then it costs them more with the other. So this is the biggest concern of teachers in my district from what they've told me. I just simply said that, or meant that I think in order to make it work, it has to be all-inclusive and mandatory. And the only other comment I would make is that, from what we looked at with groups, there are a couple of ways to save money. There's some savings by pooling people together that you get just from economies of scale. But most of the savings come when you can be self-insured and basically get the unnecessary layer of administrative, that middleman out of the picture. And I know last year with the Education Minnesota bill, there was a compromise made that put that middle layer back into the picture again. I would hope if we do put this together, we can try to keep it a self-insured plan.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the plan that I've been a member of with the Carpenters for 33 years is self-insured, and I do believe that's the way to go. And I hope whatever comes out of this committee that's where we go, because it is the most efficient place to go. And there is some real opportunity to save some administrative costs. Now, they're not huge. I mean, health care is expensive.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bach and Superintendent, for your bringing this bill forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll be, you know, whatever work the committee wants to do, I'll be happy to participate at whatever level you'd like me to. I'm just trying to kind of get the discussion on the table. That's the point of the bill.
Wonderful. Next, we'd like to hear from Mr. Morocco, if you're...
We lay the bill on the table, Mr. Chairman? What's the committee?
This morning, I
think we have a few other people that like to testify on the bill, and then I believe council...
Can lay it over temporarily.
Then we'll lay it over temporarily.
Thank you.
Are we on TV?
He's so happy.
Oh.
Why are you so happy today?
Just to be with you.
And Mr. Bartish, if you'd like to come forward, and Ms. Smith as well. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division. And in that role, I oversee two programs, the State Employee Group Insurance Program and the Public Employee Insurance Program, both of which are impacted by both pieces of legislation. Excuse me. I think the discussion that I just heard essentially outlined some of the concerns that the agency would have with bringing the group into CGIP. So I won't spend a lot of time on my testimony, but just to highlight them again would be the voluntary versus mandatory discussion, which obviously could have the potential for some adverse selection into the program. There's also some logistics issues that I want to bring to your attention. Part of this bill requires us to charge the same premium to the school districts as we do to the state employees. That would limit our ability to address some key issues, one being we wouldn't really know the experience rating of the groups coming in. So if they were to be coming in with a higher illness burden and we've already set our premiums, those premiums would be inadequate to meet the needs of the program. It would also prevent us from charging any increased premiums in order to build the necessary reserves to ensure that we have the proper backing for the program. So just some conditions around the rate setting. The bill also doesn't address any of the Minnesota management and budget direct costs. We do charge an admin fee to agencies, so the premiums charged to our members go to pay for some of the administrative expenses such as access to networks, claims adjudication, those sorts of things from the health plan. But we do also have some money that's allocated to MMB directly to provide such services as enrollment and billing, website design, those sorts of things, the creation of our plan documents. Lastly, just to point your attention to the reserves, there are really two components that are important here. One being, as I mentioned, the inability to generate the proper reserves as a result of needing to require the same premiums. The second being that a group like the school districts coming into the program may be viewed unfavorably by the federal government. For those of you who have been involved in the program in years past, when monies have been allocated from the program into the general fund, the federal government has implemented a 14% penalty on those dollars, the theory being that the federal government dollars have led to the buildup of those reserves to the amount of about 14%. If you were to bring in non-governmental entities into the program, that would have the same effect of diluting the reserves as actually allocating dollars out of the program, and as such, there may be an additional penalty. So I guess with that, I'll keep my testimony short, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Well, these are... You say they're non-government employees. Aren't these government employees?
Morocco?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, non-federal government employees would be the key here.
And why couldn't you, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Metzen,
look at their experience ratios and, like Senator Bach mentioned, pretend they're just a little higher? Couldn't they be compelled to probably bring forward some reserves, additional reserves, or some reserves to offset that so-called, maybe if it's a experience is a little greater? Could they? Could you decide what that number could be?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Kerr and Senator Metzen, I guess there's sort of two components to that. One would be that we don't know who is coming into the group because it's voluntary. So as an
example... Well, you'd know if they, Mr. Chairman, if they Senator took the Metzen. Vote and they want to come in, you'd know who they are.
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Kerr and Senator Metzen, we're setting the rates currently for the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan. This would allow programs to come in at any time. So we may, through the bargaining process with our union, set the premiums for the program, and then we would then have groups that would be asking to voluntarily come into the program throughout the year, maybe even 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road, whatever it might be. Because they can come and go at will, we wouldn't even know who to ask for their experience rating at the time that we're trying to set the rates for the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan.
Well, just a comment that obviously we have to do something in this whole area, and we encourage your department to be helpful and to be players with us to get us to that goal line. And, you know, when inflation is 2-3%, and the inflation in this industry is 15-18% a year, it's strangling us, cities, counties, government, you know, just killing private businesses. So help us, okay? Help us to get to that common ground or the goal line.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Morocco, good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
if we were to change Senator Bach's bill and make this a mandatory inclusion of all school districts, would that then eliminate some of your concerns about being able to determine experience rating and so forth? I mean, would that basically take away from most of the concerns except just this federal government issue? And could you get an answer to that as far as how the feds would look at that before we would pass this? I mean, is there someone we could ask?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Kerr and Senator Olson, certainly having a mandatory pool does create a much more stable and predictable group, and assuming that folks would be willing to give us their experience, whether that be through manual submission from individual members or if we can gain access to their claims information, that would absolutely address some of those concerns. In terms of the 14% penalty from the federal government, they would likely provide us with some guidance but wouldn't necessarily ultimately tell us what the penalty would be or if there even would be one. I'm basing that on the experience that we had when dollars were allocated to the general fund from the program. We had all along suspected that there would be a penalty, and we had testified to that fact, but we couldn't say for certain that there would be and exactly what the amount would be. My suspicion would be that this would be another instance where we could say that there will likely be a penalty, but until it actually occurs, I'm not sure that the federal government would provide us much guidance on this matter. But I'm certainly happy to make the attempt, but I guess my experience is that they don't typically like to rule on anything until it actually has occurred.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bach.
I think we just heard one of the bigger challenges of this session as it comes to reforms. And I think there are going to be significant reforms, I hope, coming out of this session between state agencies, is people need to get over this paradigm that we're in, that we can't do something because there's all these obstacles in the way. I think we need to start thinking about, instead of putting up barriers, trying to figure out how it is we're going to accomplish things. Instead of thinking about what's in the way, kind of take a look at the end and figure out how, if there's an end result we want to get to, let's figure out how we get there. And that's been a problem around here probably since the beginning of time, is it's much easier to stop things in here than it is to make things happen. And all of us, as we look at merging departments, merging agencies, I mean, some of the significant things that are likely to come out of this session, all the people that are going to be involved in that process need to figure out how people don't put barriers up. And we try to figure out how collectively we all try and find a way to deliver services to the public more efficiently and cheaper. Considering our budget constraints and some of the inflationary paths we're on, we just cannot continue to keep doing business in state government and in our schools and in our local governments the way we've been doing it. It is not sustainable. Just wanted to get that out there, and that is kind of a general statement, I think, about something going to be very important to moving forward to the conclusion of this session. We all need to think about how we get things done, not the things that are in the way.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your comments. Senator Bach, and I think as Senator Olson has indicated and you have indicated, I think we all agree on the end result. Question for Mr. Morocco. The concerns that you'd raised about this particular bill, do they apply just to the CGIP program, or also are those the same kind of concerns that I see you're going to testify here in the second bill? Are they also the same concerns for the public employee insurance pool?
Mr. Morocco, if you'd like to make a comment now, I guess that would be appropriate.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, we would have some concern, as you'll hear from the PEEP, but they are different because the bill is fundamentally written differently. We don't have the federal – obviously, it's the other bill is mandatory. We wouldn't have the Federal Reserve, the federal dollars issue, because there are no federal dollars within the PEEP program. So it is fundamentally different. So.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for your comments. Mr. Bartish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bartish. I represent Health Partners, and I'm also here today on behalf of Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is comprised of Minnesota's 8 nonprofit health plans. We understand the intent of this bill is to provide a voluntary option for school districts that are struggling to afford health insurance. We support that goal, really have no concerns with the mechanism to provide that option to school districts. But we do have one concern that I think it's important to raise with the committee, and that is that the legislation will provide another mechanism for a greater number of groups to leave the fully insured market and therefore erode the base of contributors to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. The committee is well aware of the eroding base to fund the losses for MCHA and the burden that places on the fully insured market. And this bill before us today would allow both fully and self-insured school districts to join CGIP. CGIP, as you know, does not contribute to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. For fully insured districts that would join this pool, join CGIP, their current contribution to MCHA would be spread to the rest of the existing fully insured market. When the state chose to self-insure, it made a deal to the market, really, that it would abide by the same benefits and regulations that it places on Minnesota's fully insured market. And this was really a good policy decision because it forced legislators to look at how changes to state law would impact the market and how they would impact their own budgets and their own health care. And that was a good policy decision. There's two exceptions to this rule that I'm aware of. And the first is the exemption the state granted itself from taxes paid by the fully insured market, one of those being MCHA assessment. And I think this exemption has had an effect on policy at the state. I think if the state were a contributing member of MCHA, that they would look at the growing losses in MCHA and the eroding base of those who fund MCHA differently, and it would be a greater concern to the state. The other exception I'm aware of, granted to CGIP, is the requirement that dependents be eligible for coverage until the age of 25. And in some ways, this exception is a little bit more troubling in that it was made while the legislature was enacting that legislation on the rest of the fully insured market purely because of the cost issue. And again, that's a concern when you're adding public employees to this pool. Does it give the greater ability for the legislature to exempt themselves from regulations or rules that apply to the rest of the marketplace? That would be a bad policy. Again, we agree with what this legislation is trying to do. Our concerns lie with the fact that CGIP does not currently abide by all of the laws and regulations that apply to the fully insured market. A simple solution to this, since we're about solutions, is that actually the state could agree to pay for MCHA, or at least for those groups who are going to be joining CGIP or some of the other pools moving forward, that they contribute at the same level that is currently in place. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your remarks. Ms. Smith, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is the state's largest business advocacy organization, representing over 2,700 members. 80% of those members are small employers, meaning 100 or fewer employees. And the chamber opposes this bill solely because of the reasons that Mr. Barsh just laid out for you, that basically it would create a smaller funding source for the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association by taking many school district employees out of the fully insured pool. The NSHA assessment accounts for more than 2% of the premiums paid for the fully insured market. And as you all well know, the fully insured market is mainly made up of small and medium-sized employers and individuals, many of who are struggling right now just to offer health care benefits for their employees. I just want to point out to you the two handouts that I gave to the committee. First, there's this one with the graph that basically shows where Minnesotans currently get their insurance. And if you compare looking at it, many fewer people are getting their insurance in the fully insured market because a lot of employers have gone to self-insured because they don't have to pay assessments like this. Also, I handed out another handout on the tax chart that shows how healthcare taxes affect various members of the marketplace, and I would just advise that you take a brief look at that. I believe the state should abide by Minnesota Statute 43A.23, which requires the state to follow all mandates passed by the legislature. For example, the state, schools, cities, counties, and the public employees insurance program as well, and other political subdivisions should be contributing members of MSHA. I strongly urge you not to further burden small employers and individuals in the fully insured market by letting state and local governments get out of paying their fair share of the MSHA assessment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Olson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just have to say that I agree with you. I don't think we can afford to continue to narrow the pool that pays toward MSHA. But I think that would be a small price to pay. And I think I have to – can't say I speak for teachers, but I think they would probably be willing to the benefits of being a part of this pool, even with that 2% assessment applying, I would think would definitely offset the concern you have. But what I would think is a better solution, and I know we can't control this at the federal level, I'm just wondering if the chamber has a position on this. I mean, the much more fair position would be for everybody to be paying this, including the large businesses that are exempt under ERISA right now. The small businesses are really at a disadvantage, having to pay a disproportionate share because of that. And if we could work with our federal partners to take away that exemption and make it fair across the board for everyone, that would be a much better solution from my standpoint. Does the chamber have a position on that?
Ms. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson. No, I don't believe we have a position on that, but I think that that should be part of the discussion in terms of where we go forth. I think, though, to your point that it's a better sacrifice to get these teachers into the pool than to have fewer people paying the MSHA assessment. My concern is that we'll have fewer people covered in the rest of the market, that we might have these teachers covered, but that we might not have as many employees out there covered. And I think that should be considered as well, because if employers can't afford the cost of being part of the fully insured market, healthcare is a benefit. It's not a requirement. And employers can choose not to offer that health care.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I made myself clear because I was agreeing with you. I was saying.
Whoa, wait a minute.
What I was saying was I think that if we were to pay this assessment or if teachers had the option of paying this and being able to be a part of the pool except for having to pay this, I'm guessing they would still rather come into the pool. And so it wouldn't drive any small businesses out because you wouldn't be losing those people or you wouldn't be losing their contributions toward MSHA.
I apologize. Ms. Smith. Thank you. I apologize. Yes, that is – we're in agreement.
Okay. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I would encourage that all players, like that's what Mr. Bach was talking about, including the chamber, be part of the solution. Help us, okay? So I don't know if you're on the sidelines or not, but I would encourage you to get in the game. And it's not a game. It's a very serious situation. And help us, help the state, and help us get to that goal line that we talked about. So be part of the process, if you would, going forward. Maybe you've been doing more than I know. I don't know that, but help us out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Scheid Is it your intent that we would just temporarily set this bill aside and then we'd hear testimony on Senate Bill 915? Or Senate Bach asked, and I wasn't sure what you would like to do.
Mr. Chairman, I know that state and local government has asked for this, and I don't think that they've asked for any, of the other bills, I think. So I guess it's up to the committee to decide if you want to keep this on the table for discussion. And because I think that what we're going to see in Senator Dibble's bill is a different approach than we've seen in the past. From Education Minnesota, he's carrying that bill, but it's different than the
student government has to see this one too.
The previous legislation. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move. Actually, I was thinking we might wait till everybody was done, but I think I'd move. Did you have any amendments?
No amendments.
I do,
Senator.
Madam Chair, just based on the conversation, if Senator Bach would consider this a favorable amendment, because I really think this is the only way this would work, I would like to move an amendment that would make this mandatory as opposed to optional. And I think if you just were to, on line 1.13, delete the words "may choose to" and insert "shall," and then from line 1.7 down, delete pretty much the rest of the bill, I think.
Mr. Tax Chair, what do you think about that?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're probably going to want to keep this bill. And Senator Schott, I mentioned, I think, before you were here, I don't have any illusion that this bill is going to land on the governor's desk, but this was an effort on my behalf, on behalf of the school district I live in, to start this discussion about larger pools of public employees. And what committee that work gets done in, whether it's here or in local government or in education, not a decision I feel like I need any input in. I don't have a reason to want to pass it out of here. If the work's going to be done in this committee, then maybe it should be left here, and I'm willing to participate at whatever level the committee is interested in me participating at.
Chairman.
Senator Metzer.
I just simply believe that there's so much going on in these three bills that if we move them out of here, this is the Commerce Committee, and the work should be done in this committee. And it just seems to me that we're acting too fast to add an amendment on, move this thing out of here to local and government affairs. I mean, they're a very important committee, but they don't do the work that we're supposed to be doing here, Senator Bach. And I feel that way about the next one. Are these good public policy things? I guess we're not there yet. And we've got time left in this session, and I think once Senator Scheid and Vice Chair Sparks, we move it out of here, where the work, in my opinion, should be done, then we lose that continuity and then maybe take the best of some of these bills maybe and have a bill at the end of the day. I don't know. But I'm not comfortable, for one, to move this out today. And I think the author of the bill is agreeing with me, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, I'll say it again. Some committee, whether it's this one or the next one, needs to do some work on this subject. But I think at the end of this session, we need to do something on this. And we need to, at some point, engage the governor. We need to do something that's going to get passed into law.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I really agree with that, because I think at the end of the day, we're probably going to be left with these choices. Is it better for the schools to be merged under CGIP? Is it better for them to be merged under PEEP? Is it better for them to stand on their own as a single pool? And each one of these bills is presenting a different way of doing this. It would be good to have someone who could give us the overall comparisons, the pluses and minuses, and and then be able to look at what the best approach is, or maybe a piece of this and a part of that. But they really aren't, they can't all go forward anyway. We're going to only be able to do one or the other, so.
Well, and I think if the author seems to be okay with it, and I think that Senator Metzen brings up some good points, too, that I believe maybe we should temporarily set this bill aside. We're going to hear Senate File 814, and I think that this is under our jurisdiction. So we'll continue to work with Senator Bach and the other authors.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you. I'll participate to whatever degree you would like me to.
Thank you very much, Senator Bach.
Do we need a motion, Mr. Chair?
Do we lay it on the table?
Just lay it over.
Just lay over the bill, Mr. Chairman. I think that that's really the prudent thing to do. It was my first inclination, and I just wasn't sure where the committee wanted to go.
Good. We'll do that then. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dibble. Senate File 915. That's
fine. Yeah. Thank you. Welcome
to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So in the interest of starting this conversation, if that's my cell phone, I'll turn it off.
We think that's somebody's cell phone, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So we have a slightly different take on the theme that's been started in today's hearing. This bill, Mr. Chair and members, is the latest in the ongoing effort to establish affordable access to high quality health care for school employees. And I'm sure many of you have heard the stories in the recent years, and the story continues about districts only being able to offer ever-increasing premiums and ever-increasing co-pays for fewer and fewer and very expensive services. In fact, seven districts now completely go without offering their employees health care insurance. Some only offer very high deductible health care plans in combination with health savings accounts, some as high as $10,000, which is just almost the same, Mr. Chair and members, as not offering health insurance at all, because people completely forego accessing health care for lower level issues and concerns and wait till things get more dire. I think you said yesterday that that's more like having house insurance. That's only insurance when things get extraordinary and so expensive that prevents you from going into full bankruptcy and losing your house as a result of your health. Mr. Chair, members, this bill this year seeks to essentially replicate the state's CGIP Advantage Plan. It's not quite as literal in that as Senator Bach's bill, but rather it creates a parallel plan very similar to the CGIP, the State Employee Group Insurance Plan, but posits that within in PEEP, the Public Employees Insurance Plan, that now has about 4,000 folks in it, and that's the plan that offers health insurance to local units of government who otherwise are having trouble finding insurance or have such a small group of employees that they're able to access a larger pool through PEEP. This would, of course, bring PEEP into a much larger status, but it would take advantage of all of the attendant associated administrative infrastructure. The plan would be largely patterned after CGIP, so the state school employees would enjoy the benefits and roughly the same as we do, but it also offer two other levels of coverage for different costs, including a high deductible. Mr. Chair, members, I can run through the bill very quickly if that's your pleasure. It establishes, of course, similar to what we enjoy, a health improvement program that's services around prevention and health promotion, bringing the overall cost of health care down. Many, many of school employees don't have those as a part of their health plans. That's a very, very cost-effective provision. Section 2 establishes the insurance trust fund to receive the premiums, provide for the cost of the program, and administering the program. Paragraph B, that provides for the premium tax that goes into the health care access fund. Section 3, that gets to MCHA and makes sure that this plan pays the MCHA premium, and later we'll get into this language around the prorated premium in MCHA and we'll have Mr. Stang help us, or Ms. Lewa help us understand that, because I think that'll come up in future testimony. Section 4, by way of definition, just tells us that this plan covers all school employees. And Section 5 establishes the school employee insurance program within the public employee insurance program. And it patterns that on CGIP. And it starts January 1st, 2011. Section 6 establishes that this is mandatory for all schools who provide health insurance. Section 14 establishes a labor management committee who is authorized to work with the Commissioner of Finance to design the plan. And then provides for the membership, 4 from Education Minnesota, 1 from SEIU, 1 from AFSCME, 1 from the Minnesota School Employees Association, and then 7 appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association. Subdivision 15 in Section 8 allows for reinsurance. That's getting to this issue of, you know, what is the liability going to be on day one? We need to make sure that there's reinsurance allowed. Section 9, again, these are the provisions. The next two sections are the provisions that have to do with establishing that this plan will be a contributing member of MCHA, et cetera, in Section 10. And then we have the how the MCHA assessment is determined. As I understand, MCHA is not a profit-making plan. It's an insurance of last resort. By definition, experiences a lot of losses. Those losses are allocated across all the membership plans and shared, and that's how the premium is determined, or at least half the premium is determined. Section 12. Again, that's the premium tax for has to do with the premium tax for the healthcare access fund. And then the effective date, of course, January 1st, 2011. Mr. Chair, we have Tom Dewar, who's here from Education Minnesota. He's the president of Education Minnesota, and he can share with you why this bill is such a great idea.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Tom Dewar, president of Education Minnesota, the State Educators Union, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about this important bill and here to urge your support for Senate File 915, creating a statewide school employee health insurance pool. I represent 70,000 educators across the state, and educators are suffering through nothing less than a full-blown healthcare crisis. And of course, we know that educators are not alone in this, but the difference is this is one that you can help fix. We absolutely agree with the governor that Minnesota should be doing everything possible to save money by becoming more efficient and not duplicating efforts. This is a reform with potential to save significantly more money for Minnesota school districts and taxpayers than pooling the purchase of office supplies. It provides administrative efficiencies, economy of scale, purchasing power, negotiating leverage for a large pool, and it's a tested and proven plan design that we know will work for employees and employers because it's modeled after the State Employee Insurance Group. For all employees in Minnesota, public and private, premiums are going up 10 to 12% each year, while CGIP, the premium experience over the last 4 years, has been significantly below that, and they still maintain their benefits. Well, why do we need this bill now? Healthcare costs are creating huge burdens on school district budgets and hardships for employees. Cost spikes in several school districts have risen 30 to 50% in a year. I'll give you two examples. One is in Pine River Bacchus, their premiums went up 50%. They now have a $5,000 deductible for an individual and $10,000 for family. That's like having no insurance at all, as Senator Dibble said, and it's costing the district a lot of money. In Robbinsdale, my own home school district, over the last few years, they've had over 30% increases where they have employees that are now paying the school district every 2 weeks because they do not have enough income to cover the costs of insurance. School employees are not only paying more, but we are seeing significant reductions in our coverage of health insurance. At a time when every education dollar absolutely needs to stretch as far as possible, we cannot afford to waste money in this way. The advantages of this bill are negotiating and purchasing power of a large pool of 200,000 people. It helps prevent cost spikes while providing stability and predictability in premiums, and school districts still retain their control as employers to negotiate with the unions to bargain choice of plans and the share of premiums and who is eligible to participate. This bill has changed to address concerns and questions that have arisen over the past 2 years. It's modeled on the successful and familiar state employee insurance program, the same plan that you as legislators have. It's administrated by the same contractors as CGIP, allowing us to take advantage of the same low administrative fees. Many choices are within the program for employers and employees, and a lower cost than previous proposal because we don't have to build a plan from the ground up. Senators, this is the right bill at the right time for Minnesota. Please give it your support.
Thank you, Mr.
And Mr. Chair, I have Lee Johansson here just by way of identification. He's here to respond to questions. He has a lot of technical information in his head that can help us with some questions.
Mr. Dewar, is this, you said you made some changes, but was this proposal vetoed by the governor last year?
The governor vetoed the bill last year, but that was a fully insured plan.
Okay, this so is, you've made some changes.
We've made changes, yes.
Okay, thank you. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, has this gone to a vote of the membership also? Is the entire Education Minnesota supporting this bill?
Senator Prettner-Solin, I'll refer your question to President Dewar.
Mr. Chair, Senator, well, as in any organization, we have a process for moving things through our organization, and we have had votes at our representative business convention which support this bill.
Mr. Chair, I am understanding that there are some school districts that are opposed to this bill, though.
As in any organization, you're never going to have 70,000 people agree on any one thing. But as in any organization, we have a process in place where our members can have their voice heard and a vote can be taken. And we've done that at our business convention. And again, it is in overwhelming support of it.
Senator Prettner-Solin, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How many people vote at your business convention? Is it the board or?
It's representative of our membership based on the size of their local. So we have about 700 members that come from throughout the state. And every school district has representatives that are eligible to come to our representative convention.
Senator Marty, and just before we do that, because I think this is going to take a little while, if people are here to hear Senate File 106, I've been informed that we're going to move that to Thursday, March 5th, and that will be first on the agenda, just by the way. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dewar, I just wondered, I think you were in the room during the previous discussion, if Senator Olson's amendment was on there just to say that all school districts must enroll its eligible persons in the CGIP program, and you put in an MCHA provision, wouldn't that be a lot simpler to do than trying to do what you're trying to do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, what we're trying to do is create a mirror program so that we know what the experience is, and then eventually that we would merge the two programs. But we think it's the prudent action right now to create a mirror program to that.
Senator
Mr.
Marty?
Mr. Chair, it seems like just watching this for the last 14, 15 years, it seems, I just think it might be a lot quicker to do it the other way. I agree with Senator Olson about Senator Bach's bill that if it wasn't mandatory, you couldn't do it. But I just think that might actually make it easier, but I'm just guessing. I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I'll take a crack at it, and then Mr. Johansson will do better than I will. I don't necessarily disagree. I do think not that any of these ideas ever have their challenges with stakeholders, but I think the idea came up to do this in the public employee insurance plan for the reason that Tom Dewar described. There's concern about bringing it into CGIP, and we don't know what the experience rating is and what that's going to do to costs for folks who are already in the CGIP plan. This is almost as good as doing that because the plan is kind of housed in the same shop. It's largely parallel in many ways. It can take advantage of a lot of the existing administrative infrastructure and overhead that's on hand, a lot of the existing vehicles that they use to communicate with the employees, to the using the existing contract providers, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Preferred One, Health Partners, a lot of the benefits, the rate structure, the premium structure, et cetera, are patterned after CGIP. So it's essentially kind of setting up right next to CGIP, this PEEP, or what we call SEEP plan. So it's almost the same thing, gets us past some of the anxiety that some folks feel about pulling all of those school employees who might have a higher utilization experience into CGIP without knowing exactly what that's going to mean for premiums.
Mr. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, Senator Dibble did a very good job. I just want to stress one very important difference from our proposal this year to what we've been proposing in past years, and that is this ability now. After about 18 months ago, PEEP was completely revamped. They completely redid the way they offer insurance, and they created what I call a clone of the CGIP model. So it has the exact same benefit set. It is administered through the exact same contracts with Preferred One, Health Partners, and Blue Cross. The only difference is that the risk pool is not merged with the state employees. So you, in that way, avoid that issue of an unknown impact on the state and the state's budget. You avoid the issue of the federal funds coming in. You don't have to worry about that. And yet you get advantage of the plan design, which is a very successful plan design. You get advantage of the administrative structure, which is, we believe, as efficient a structure as in existence. And then you set the table, so now you have all of that claims data in one pool. And down the road, 2, 3, 5 years from now, we can investigate and say, okay, what is the impact on CGIP if we were to roll those together? Or you can say we work well in two separate, one pool of 200,000, one pool of 120,000. And so we really believe that you gain a lot by doing it this way, and you avoid some of those pitfalls that are the unknown that are existing in the market today.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Let's see. Next on the list, we have Mr. Morocco, if you'd like to come back again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, I would just like to provide a couple comments on Senate File 915. And I think these are really just points of consideration as you discuss this bill further. Obviously, this one is slightly different than what we heard in the prior bill. It does address some of the concerns on the mandatory versus voluntary. This one is explicitly mandatory. It also doesn't have some of the concerns that would exist in the CGIP group, mainly the potential federal penalty that may be incurred on the program. But there's a couple things I just want to point out for your consideration. First would be that this would be a significant increase to the current PEEP group. And I point this out just as to illustrate that there would be some changes that would need to occur within PEEP. Obviously, PEEP being about 4,000 members today, presumably increasing to 200,000 members, we would need to really operate in a much different manner. The infrastructure necessary to administer the program would be different, whether it be communications, IT infrastructure, underwriting. So there may be costs that go down because we are doing less underwriting for individual groups. There may be costs that go up because we need a broader, more sophisticated IT infrastructure. So I merely point these things out because they're, depending on those changes, there could be some cost to MMB or other costs that need to be incurred by the districts coming in just to accommodate the scaling of the program. There has been some discussion about the reserve. This bill doesn't necessarily address the reserve issue, so just simply want to point that out. I'll leave it to others to decide how to manage or how best to address the reserves, the reserve levels, but just want to note that is absent from this bill. The other piece, I guess lastly, that I want to comment on is that although we are given authority to manage PEEP, we aren't necessarily part of the governing body of PEEP. There is a board, I believe it's a 12-member board, I think that's essentially there to help guide the program. Not sure exactly what MMB's role in that board would be, and really ultimately where the responsibility for the fiduciary responsibility for the program might be. So should the board want to take the program in one direction, but for solvency or for other reasons would be deemed inappropriate, what would be the mechanism to reconcile between what the state might want to do in terms of managing its liability versus what the board might want to do in terms of plan design? Lastly, I would just point out that there are other non-K through 12 districts in PEEP. Currently, there's 4,000 members. About half of those members are currently K through 12 districts. So creating a pool within PEEP that takes the existing pool or the existing group and eliminates about half of the membership. We're just uncertain what will remain of the group that is currently in PEEP that's a non-K through 12. So we have some cities, some counties that are also in PEEP, but because they're not part of the group, when we cut them in half, we're just not certain what their experience rating is, what that might do to their premiums, and what ultimately the impact might be on some of the local units of government that are currently in PEEP. So with that, again, just some things for consideration as you discuss this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have a lot of questions. And it's been a long time since I've reviewed PEEP, so I don't exactly remember how that operates. But could you tell us about the transformation it's gone through in the last year that was referenced earlier?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator, essentially, you know, what we found was that there was tremendous success with the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan. What we were finding in PEEP is that while it was meeting, seemed to be meeting the needs of the members, it was fairly cumbersome program to administer because it had a wide range of offerings. It had multiple plan designs with all kinds of variations related to co-pays and co-insurance. And so while it provided a lot of variety for the incoming school districts, it was very difficult for our plan administrators and us as a program to really administer because there were so many different variations. So what we decided to do was to simplify the program and really leverage the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan. So we're able to utilize the existing contracts. We're able to utilize the existing plan design, the networks, all of the collective resources that go into CGIP. We're able to leverage that through the PEEP program. And then so really what we did is we took that as kind of the base model for the PEEP programs, but still recognizing that the school districts coming in might need some additional options beyond just the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan as it existed. So we created a couple different variances on the same theme, and for lack of better terminology, I'll just refer to it sort of as a gold, silver, and bronze version of the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan. So while the plan that you all experience, I will say, is maybe the gold version, meaning it's really the most comprehensive, we also sort of have a middle version, and we have an HSA-compatible version, which is a little bit more geared towards sort of catastrophic care. For those school districts that don't necessarily want to invest a lot of money into the health care offerings for their members but still want some option. Obviously, school districts coming in are coming in with all kinds of different expectations as to what they really want to contribute for their members. And so we tried to create some range, albeit not as broad as what we used to have, but we think we have better administrative simplification and clear options for the districts.
Thank you. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Morocco, how large is the membership in PEEP now?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair, Senator, currently it's about 4,000 members.
So how large would this increase it then?
Mr. Chair and Senator, my presumption would be that the school districts are about 200,000 lives, but I would need someone to confirm that. So we'd go from about 4,000 to about 204,000, presumably.
Okay, and Mr. Morocco, you currently, though, do cover some K-12 education teachers or staff or you do? And how were they identified? How did they happen to come into the program?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator, we will essentially give a bid to any public entity that's interested in coming into the group. Obviously, as a unit of 4,000, we're essentially providing quotes based on the experience of the group coming in as well as the existing experience of the PEEP program. My presumption would be that once the K-12 becomes 200,000, it really would operate fundamentally different than the way it would work today with the school district coming in for a bid. And that's why I mentioned at the forefront of my testimony that I think the program really does morph into something different than I think what we would see today.
And Mr. Morocco, you also mentioned the reserve fund. Does each group that's coming into the fund have to fund their own reserve fund?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator, no. The groups coming in do not come in with any money, so we need to strike the right balance between pricing the individual group and their experience along with the impact that it's going to have on the current program and take all those factors into consideration as we set the rates for the group coming in as well as all the remaining groups. But there are no reserves that are coming in with the groups.
And it seems to me that was an issue before, was the reserves with the Department of Commerce, certainly. But anyway, go ahead, Senator Prettner-Sol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Morocco, I'm still not clear, though. Can you operate without a reserve fund? Or
Mr. Morocco?
Or would you have to establish fees that would immediately fund the reserve fund, or how would you take care of that?
Mr. Morocco?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator, again, I think that the fundamental premise of the program changes. So as an example, if you compare CGIP to PEEP, CGIP essentially has very little stop loss in its program because it's so large. It doesn't need to insure the program really on any level other than something that's a major catastrophic concern. We probably spend $500 million in the CGIP program. We spend probably less than $200,000 on stop loss insurance. That's considerably different than what we have in PEEP, where we have stop loss insurance both on the individual level so that no member catastrophic claim will overly burden the program, as well as a program-wide stop loss insurance. So, and I don't want to get too technical on the individual programs, but that's just a demonstration of how the programs really need to operate differently once you go from a 4,000 pool into a 200,000 pool. And I think you would see PEEP operate in terms of stop loss, in terms of admin fees, in terms of reserve requirements, would really run more like CGIP is run today and less like what you would see PEEP.
Senator Prettner-Sol.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Morocco, do you anticipate there'd be a fiscal note on this, or do you anticipate that it would be paid through the membership?
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I'm not sure that I could answer that. I think the only fiscal note that I would have would be the impact to MMB. I'm not sure that I would be, because the K-12s would be incurring the cost to deal with whatever the reserve requirements would be. That wouldn't necessarily be a cost on Minnesota management and budget. If other state agencies would I don't know if Commerce or Health or others would have a fiscal note related to that, I'm not certain, but I don't believe MMB would have something directly related to the reserve issue. Although we may comment on it, I don't think it would be an actual cost.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I'll just simply echo some of the earlier words of my esteemed colleague, Senator Bach. The time to try to solve problems is today, and I think Mr. Morocco has articulated the issues in good faith, and I don't want to mischaracterize Mr. Morocco or his intent or his motivation, but this issue of the reserves is an issue that's very easily solved. It presents really no real barrier unless people are looking for barriers and ways to not do something that needs to be done. It's very easy to go out to the market and buy stop loss coverage, and over time build up the necessary reserves to deal with what might be worst case scenario liabilities of a 200,000 member strong health insurance plan. You know, admittedly, there, you know, there needs to be some ability to deal with that in the early days should a whole bunch of people file a whole bunch of claims earlier than would be anticipated. But over time, that coverage goes down as the reserves are built.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask Mr. Morocco, and I, please forgive me if you've said this already. Did you say, or do you know how many lives, well, you would know, how many lives are involved in the CGIP? I mean, I understand how many state employees we have. I think it's less than we have teachers and people in the pool of education employees. So if you could just maybe tell, if I could have some sort of
Mr. Morocco?
Sense of proportion.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid. In terms of the numbers, I'll just run through them quickly again. PEEP currently has about 4,000 members. CGIP currently has about 50,000 employees, 120,000 members. Okay, and I'm assuming that the school districts are about 200,000 members.
Thank you. That's what I wanted.
Thank you very much. That was helpful.
School employees aren't.
I think
that's right.
Okay. Senator Scheid, we're going to have a little flashback to our time served on the Education Committee, I think, now. Mr. Cronquist, if you'd like to come forward. Mr. Lundell and
yes.
Ms. Kelleher, if you'd like to join us as well.
Kelleher.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Scott Cronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. We represent 30 school districts in the 7-county metropolitan area. And we certainly appreciate Senator Dibble and others' work on this issue. It is a major issue, one that we have had discussions on. And so it's not lightly that we oppose this legislation. As I mentioned, we've held conferences. Our school districts individually have wrestled with this, worked with their local bargaining groups, trying to figure out ways to control health care costs. But in the end, Mr. Chairman and members, our board has concluded that creating a mandatory pool is not going to solve the problem. We look at examples from other states. In fact, a couple of the largest pools in the country are in California and New Jersey, and they insure the number of lives that dwarf what we're talking about here. I mean, they're talking 700,000-800,000 lives, and that has not prevented double-digit increases in premiums in those cases. Contrarily, we have examples of voluntary pools in parts of the country that have been able to control costs and experienced a 0 or 1 or 2% increases for several years running. And in fact, we have examples of that right here in our own state, in my own member districts. The reality is that the National Association of State Personnel Executives has concluded through research that you really max out on the economies of scale at a pool of about 20,000. Once you get a pool that size, you've reached your economies of scale. Going bigger is really not going to help you control costs further in terms of purchasing power. What does help control costs is tackling utilization. And that's where you have to talk about consumer education, disease management, wellness programs, incentives to use less costly services. And we have several districts within our association that have done that through joint labor management committees. And in fact, as I mentioned, have for years, several years running now, experienced premium increases of either 0 or 1 or 2%. And in fact, I can tell you who some of the most vociferous opponents of a mandatory pool are the employees in some of those school districts. So, Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to stop there because I know you got a lot more testifiers coming, but I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Lindell.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, I'd just like to echo a lot of what Mr. Cronquist has said, and I certainly respect Senator Dibble and the members of Education Minnesota for bringing forward this proposal. But in Schools for Equity and Education, our 60 members, we also oppose the legislation as currently construed or as currently developed. We do believe there needs to be a long-term solution to these problems, but right now we think that the mandatory nature of this bill really is the big stumbling block for us. This is part of health care benefits are part of a locally negotiated system, and why should we pick out the health care as opposed to the other parts of the locally negotiated system? I think that there obviously the affordability issues are things that not only go across public employees, they go across all of society. I think that looking at things that not only deal with this relatively, when we're talking about larger units and the like, certainly we may need to even look further outside and look at affordable health care for all, not just within the public sphere. So with that, I will stand for questions, but again, I'll just be brief.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. I'm here today, Mr. Chairman, to express opposition to this bill. We have a lot of concerns. Probably first and foremost is the reserve issue. That's important for us that our employees have insurance and that it's available, and if they need coverage, there's money to provide that coverage. We have another concern that's not addressed in the bill that actually mandates that school districts are not allowed to lower employee health care coverage unilaterally, so we can't do it on our own. And it's not clear in this bill that that has changed with this legislation, so our thought would be, would that be just rounding up to wherever the best health plan is, definitely the gold or platinum level? And last but not least, retirees continue to be a question. And as school employees retire, teachers in particular, they're guaranteed the insurance they were provided when they were teaching as of that moment. It's not sure when you use retirees as eligible employees in this bill that those retirees would have that same access. So we've got concerns about this issue. Last but not least, we believe that this would likely cost more, not less. It eliminates competition in the market and local control over wages and benefits. And every school district in the state has got a mix of wages and benefits. We're not all at the same place. We're not all easily convertible. And it seems to be evident that Minnesota Advantage would be the individual plan with variations off that, but certainly not as many variations as are presently available in the market. Once again, the reserves I want to put on your radar, and we feel that without adequate reserves, our employees are at risk. And last but not least, we think it ignores the real cost drivers in school district health plans, such as aging employee populations, prescription drug costs, high-tech procedures, and covering retirees in the plan. So we need solutions to those, Mr. Chairman. Be willing to work at finding a solution to all those issues.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Keller, those things that you mentioned at the end, those are concerns now. All of those things are real concerns now, and especially having sat on negotiation committees for years, the problem seems to only be getting worse, not better. More and more districts, it seems to me, are having to drop insurance altogether. So I am not convinced that this larger pool wouldn't reduce risk or save costs, and I'm just not sure I'm buying the argument yet. Because, again, all the reasons that you just talked about, those seems to be getting worse, actually. I don't know. Maybe a comment more than a question.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to make a few comments to your testimony as well as the couple of the other testifiers previously. When we looked at the pool that we studied, as I said earlier, a couple summers ago, we were told that there was a certain number. When you reach that number, you no longer had to worry about adverse selection. I don't think that we were ever told, however, that at a certain – and the number was quite a bit higher than 20,000. But you were never told that you couldn't do more in terms of economies of scale. And if you just think about it from a common sense standpoint, let's just say you're negotiating for prescription drugs. If you have a group of 20,000, you certainly don't have the leverage that you would have if you had a group of 200,000 or a million. I mean, common sense just tells us that those kinds of economies of scale are going to put you in a much better position in terms of leveraging costs. So I don't know what study that was referring to, but that would be different than the information we had, or even, I think, what makes sense from a common sense standpoint. In terms of what you're talking about with the cost drivers, you know, I don't know that there is anything out there other than just kind of a philosophical statement that's been made that somehow competition in the marketplace drives down costs. I haven't seen any evidence of that. In fact, it seems like what happens with competition, it's this somehow idea that you can only buy what you need or that you're going to compare prices. At least in rural Minnesota, we don't have those options. You're lucky to find someone who covers you or a doctor you can see. The idea that we're going to spend more money to shop for health care by putting this stuff online, it's not a workable thing, nor do insurance companies. If they provide you something less in terms of insurance coverage, they're not giving you a break because you're not buying that particular coverage. They're just charging the person more who's going to need that. I mean, that's what their actuaries figure out. They figure this out so that, you know, it's just not a situation that works like most commodities we would buy in the marketplace. So what the studies tend to show is that if you can pool people, you will definitely have stability. You may have a few that are going to lose a little bit in the short term if they have real good experience ratings, but over the long term, it will even out the stability for everyone. We won't have any groups out there anymore that can't afford to buy insurance at all. And then we will, into the whole system, I think, put in these cost savings we've been talking about.
Ms. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, I just want to respond to that last comment. I believe at last count we had 7 school districts who didn't offer health. Some offer cash in lieu instead, so actually a cash settlement. But those are all negotiated between the school district and the school employees. Those are not arrived at unilaterally. So certainly, you know, if you want to take the choice and discretion away from local school districts and employees, who this is a good way to do it. And our concern is that people have invested money in their health plan as an employee because that's where you've negotiated to, maybe taken less salary. If, in fact, you make it down to 5 plans, the employees that invested in more of a health plan, in fact, get penalized for their foresight. Unless you're going to round everybody up, which is going to increase costs for school districts. And in this unprecedented time of budget deficit, I'm not sure where we're supposed to find those dollars to afford rounding up.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I guess in response to that, I would simply say that the cost that a person is paying for their health insurance is not really a question of something they can negotiate. It's controlled by their experience rating. If you happen to have sick or older teachers, and the best deal you can find out there is an insurance plan that's going to cost them $15,000 a year, that isn't a lot of choice. That's not like they're coming in and bargaining for, you know, something that where they're really feeling like they have any choice in the matter. That's why some school districts have ended up having to drop this coverage altogether. It's not a question of how these things have been bargained as much as it is the age or the sickness of the teachers in that particular district. And that's why by putting them all together, we even that out, as well as getting the benefits of the larger pool for things like negotiating and that type of thing.
Ms. Keller, would you like to respond? Otherwise, we need to keep moving.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I guess my only misconception is why wouldn't nurses or policemen or firefighters fall into that same kind of pool? Why only teachers? And I just don't see why that one group of people or school employees are chosen.
Thank you. Senator Olson, then we need to keep moving along.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, the only answer I would have to that is I would certainly support Senator Marty's bill, which would put everyone into it. But in the meantime, the teachers are asking us to do this, by and large, the vast majority of them. And so at least it's a step we can make in that direction at their request.
Ms. Keller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And your school boards are asking you not to vote for this.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Grathwall and Mr. Brinkman, if you'd like to come forward. It is 2:20, so we'd like to keep moving, but we obviously want to hear from you. So welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Grathall, Minneapolis Public Schools. You've had excellent testimony today. I'd just like to say MPS continues to oppose a mandatory statewide health insurance pool, you know, separate or in PEEP. I feel a little bit like green eggs and ham. You know, I do not support it here or there. it's the mandatory nature. There are real issues. We try and control our costs in the ways that you've heard, and we'll continue to do that. If I guess it's Section 6 that makes this a mandatory. If you made this a voluntary plan, I think we could support that. But we continue to prefer to have the option to carve our own path in this on this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your comments. Mr. Brinkman?
Mr. Chairman and members, we have a few displays we'd like to put up, if we may, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Szczesinski?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just waiting for Mr. Walseth to get these visuals up. I think we're trying to dramatically show you some things that already exist today.
Mr. Chairman, I need it a little closer.
This is the black and letters of his collapse.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, depends upon your age. Usually further away is easier for me to read, at least.
I'm trying to.
Oh, boy.
Scogan, would you read those names off?
Which one do you want?
On the right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I want to introduce Paul Brinkman in just one moment. I've been lobbying on behalf of the service cooperatives and opposing this legislation. This is for the ninth year now, as I recall. I just want to make an observation over the period of time. I think there's some fundamental things on education to the committee about how insurance works is important. But more importantly, I should say that, you know, your comments haven't just fallen on deaf ears over the years, nor has teacher groups at the collective bargaining table or with the service cooperatives. Say that, you know, legislation over the years has driven the service cooperatives to get better. We've gotten better. Everybody, all of our members have wellness programs. It's a fact. We've got better products, sometimes fewer products. We've got better services, and our administrative fees have dropped. And in fact, since 2005, we've added 100 groups to our pools on a voluntary basis. So we must be doing something right. And I think we have to get at the cost drivers. It's not the purchasing side of the equation, administrative fees and some of those reinsurance. That's purchasing side. The cost drivers, Mr. Brinkman will talk a little bit about. But Mr. Paul Brinkman is one of our directors in charge of our legislative committee from Northeast Service Cooperative.
Mr. Brinkman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you for your time this afternoon. My name is Paul Brinkman, Executive Director of the Northeast Service Cooperative in Mountain Iron. Prior to this job, I worked for 10 years in healthcare, where I continue to serve today as President of the Virginia Regional Medical Center, which is a voluntary position. I also served as a local school board member in Virginia from 1987 to 2002, including one term as state president of the Minnesota School Boards Association in 2001. During my testimony, please keep in mind that service cooperatives offer the longest-running, most cost-effective rural model of shared services in the state of Minnesota. We're locally governed, widely regulated, and routinely audited. We have no authority to tax or to levy, and we currently receive no direct state appropriation. In fact, participation in a service cooperative is strictly voluntary. And in these tough times, if we can't help our members, they can vote with their feet and move on. However, at 95% retention, members choose to stay because they see the value. Now, before we begin, let's take a look at some of our displays. Sam, if you could help me briefly, on the board right now, you see a list of the 243 school districts we serve. Underneath, we have a map of all of our members, about 100 light from 2005. Right now, we serve 672 members. This map shows about just under 600 dots, which include the 243 school districts 230 cities, and 56 counties. I'm here today in opposition of Senate File 915. In general, this proposed mandate offers nothing new to address the actual cost drivers in the healthcare system. It ignores a proven record of shared services through the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, and it permanently shifts $1.5 billion in risk from local governments and service cooperatives back to the state of Minnesota. This new mandate offers nothing new to address the actual cost drivers in healthcare. Although pooling arrangements make a difference, and ours has worked well, this proposal offers no new solutions and provides no details to address the real cost drivers in healthcare, which include, we've heard some of these, utilization, plan design, premium contribution levels, and other bad practices such as single plus one, unfunded liabilities, and cash in lieu. This new mandate also ignores a proven record of shared services through the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. And remember, we provide these services on a voluntary basis. Historically, we have been more cost-effective than PEEP and other pooled programs. In rural Minnesota, for example, many of our groups are not even rateable. They have limited resources at their disposal. Senator Olson talked about that. Using standard underwriting guidelines and leveraging various local, regional, and state resources, we make it work. For example, over the past few years, teachers from 55 school districts have sought alternate quotes from PEEP. To date, not one has left us. This new mandate permanently shifts $1.5 billion in risk off local governments and service cooperatives to the state of Minnesota. As proposed, the bill does not trump local collective bargaining, which is a Minnesota tradition that is highly valued by our members. As a result, however, intentional or not, local cost drivers will remain in place while new escalating costs and liabilities shift to the state of Minnesota. As drafted, the proposal needs to be analyzed to determine what extent it puts Minnesota taxpayers further at risk and what is the state capacity to begin bailing out local school districts for unfunded liabilities such as other post-employment benefits, the retiree benefits. Right now, for example, in our case, service cooperatives hold the risk, but that risk is not on the local units of government we serve. It's not on the taxpayers. Furthermore, this proposal offers no incentive for local cost controls, and it creates the potential for state-mandated winners and losers. In short, Senate File 915 offers nothing new to address the actual cost drivers in healthcare, ignores a proven record of shared services with Minnesota service cooperatives, and permanently shifts $1.5 billion in risk to the state of Minnesota. In contrast, today, service cooperatives administer competitive, voluntary shared insurance services that respond to the needs of hundreds of schools, cities, counties, and other public agencies across the state of Minnesota. Now, in closing, let's look again at how the service cooperatives compare to PEEP today. I didn't have Sam earlier. I've learned that when you get up here, you're all on your own, I guess. Sam, are you with me? All right, there you are. Thank you. The Public Employee Insurance Plan has 73 groups. The Minnesota Service Cooperatives have 672 groups. Now, the way to look at it, and this was discussed earlier, the Public Employee Insurance Plan covers 1,400 employees. Currently, service cooperative plans cover 54,500 employees. Now, you may recall, we also mentioned earlier, of those 672 groups we have, 55 shopped. They went out for bid, and all have elected to stay in the service cooperative. It's their right to leave, but they couldn't find a competitive bid at this time with PEEP. We want to thank you for your time today, Mr. Chairman and members, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Brinkman. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brinkman, I don't doubt that there have been people shopping. I remember Northfield School District doing this some years ago, and we were given a price by the co-op for our premium. We shopped, got a lower price from PEEP, and then the service co-op came back and matched that. Obviously, members would prefer to stay with what they had, but I was wondering why we were not offered the cheaper insurance rate initially.
Mr. Brinkman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, I don't administer the insurance program in your region, in Northfield, so I'm not sure why you weren't offered the correct rate, if you will, first. I can speak to something we've just done in our region. The Mesabi East School District has a self-insured local plan, and they're having trouble sustaining that plan. Now, their renewal last year was 20-plus percent. They asked us for a quote. We just went and looked at our underwriting model, and they have some good experience in the last year, and we're able to come in at 8.5%. So in our region, matching rates, and we've been asked to do that, is something we haven't done. In fact, on the city-county side, City of Hibbing walked when their representative said, if you match, we'll stay in. And in our case, we felt it was bad practice. So it's something we haven't done.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brinkman, is it true, and obviously, you know, I have a bill coming up next, but is it true that some insurance premiums that are paid by the members of the school districts into the co-ops are used for things other than maintenance of insurance, but to go to other things that the service co-ops are providing for the districts?
Mr. Brinkman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, the way we're structured, we administer the service cooperative pools under a joint powers authority. Our insurance funds are in an enterprise fund. The enterprise funds are not commingled with operating funds. So the premiums go into the enterprise fund. They're not commingled with other funds. We do collect an administrative fee fixed at $985 per contract per month. Those dollars, we have a legal opinion, can be used for both administering the pool and helping leverage resources for our members. So if that's the part you're looking at, yes. But the premium dollars are not commingled, and they are firewalled, and those accounts are operated separately, and they're audited separately.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, is Mr. Brinkman, is that true of all service co-ops in Minnesota?
The Enterprise Fund? We need to get back to you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding, I'd like to tell you yes, but if somebody doesn't have it, I don't want to misspeak. We've had ours in place for about 8 years, 8-9 years. In fact, when current management came in, it's something we wanted. It just seemed like good practice. So we made it happen.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Brinkman, maybe you can remind me. It seems like I used to know this, but I forgot. With your service co-ops, are your members within that co-op essentially self-insured, or are you contracting with other insurance companies to provide, like get bids or whatever, to provide coverage?
Mr. Brinkman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the service cooperatives are self-insured for the pool arrangement on behalf of the members we serve. In the premium for each group member, a portion of premium goes for stop-loss insurance that allow us also to buy stop-loss coverage for high case claims. So we're self-insured regionally, and we have stop-loss coverage in place, and under the current structure, that stop-loss coverage is paid in the premium.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Brinkman, then, do you know if that stop-loss insurance, I mean, are you self-insured up to, is it the $20,000 minimum the law requires, or is it something more than that, that you buy stop-loss insurance over? That's one question I have. And then the other one is, in terms of actually managing the, or administering the coverage, do you turn around and contract, like with the Blue Cross or someone, to do that, or are you doing that administration yourself?
Mr. Brinkman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the first part of your question, again, please repeat.
My and the stop-loss above loss. What amount? Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Well, one of the beauties of the regional model we have in place is that we have the flexibility, the ability to select stop-loss coverage at the attachment point that best fits that pool and fits that region. And what we do is our pools are aggressively managed. So the stop-loss attachment point at the Northeast Service Cooperative School pool may not at all look like the stop-loss attachment point at the Southeast Service Cooperative City-County pool. So the short answer is the stop-loss accounts are at a variety of ranges that fits best that particular pool, and we analyze that at every renewal.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm interested in this, but I'm not sure everyone else wants all that detail, but I would love to see that range in those costs. And then the second part of my question is if you are administering or hiring someone like the Blues or whatever to do the administration of a part of this, or if you do that yourself.
Mr. Brinkman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, under state statute, service cooperatives are held to a higher standard for request for proposal than other insurers operating in the public sector. Generally, if you're not a service cooperative, you go out every 5 years. If you're a service cooperative, you have to go out over 4 years. But we've taken that standard one step higher, and we've put our city-county four-year cycle in syncopation with our ISD four-year cycle. So we're essentially going out under RFP every 2 years. Now, the RFP awards a carrier that will administer our claims.
Okay, that's
and currently thinking. Our carrier for 7 service cooperatives is Blue Cross Blue Shield. 1 service cooperative is working with Health Partners.
Okay, Senator Olson, these are important, but and I would remind you that I think Senator Dahl's next bill will get more to this too, so we kind of want to stay at the bill that's in front of us, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to make sure so that we understand exactly what we're paying for. It sounds like then what we are paying for is, in order for the service cooperative to get paid, you're getting paid per member about $10 a month, so about $120 a year for your administrative costs, and then maybe a little bit more than that, plus the stop-loss insurance, which is arguably an administrative cost, plus whatever the administrative costs are in Blue Cross Blue Shield, as they would normally have if someone had gone to them directly and just purchased their insurance there. So in terms of where we're trying to, the possibility for some savings of an administrative cost, it seems to me like there are multiple levels here of money that is not going directly toward paying for health care that's going to administrative costs. I guess that was the point or what I was trying to get at.
Mr. Brinkman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the multiple levels are of no consequence. The real issue is, what is the total? How much money remains for making adequate claims administration? In our case, independent actuarial studies during our last two RFP cycles have identified us in the 5-6% administrative cost, which puts us highly competitive with both public and private sector insurance pools.
Thank you. Real quick, Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, I might add, too, that it is the bottom line and what you pay and what it costs for insurance. I want to remind the committee that 55 times school district collective bargaining agreement has sought bids from PEEP in the last 2 years, and nobody left because the advantage, the economic advantages, the service co-op has always been less expensive. And I think that's really true. We have grown because they can go and get bids from Health Partners, Medica, whomever in the place that provides insurance. We have significant numbers. In fact, we cover 120,000 individuals in our pool, but we have significant numbers. It's competition, voluntary-based, and we, on the administrative side, are cheaper than anybody in Minnesota when you consider the reinsurance costs and everything else. Nobody can beat us. We've figured it out. We've been doing this for over 20 years on a shared service basis. That's why we're so good. We're so competitive. As Paul said, people can walk with their feet. But every time we've gone out for people have gone out for bids to select another provider or PEEP, we've won. They haven't left because it's a better deal sticking with the service co-op. So we figured out something that's shared service that's significant.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I'm here representing Preferred One, my client, and also the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. I know we've had a fairly long discussion, so I'll be very brief. Mr. Chairman, Education Minnesota and Senator Dibble should be congratulated. There are a number of changes that have addressed concerns that we've been talking about on this legislation. The bill is still not perfect. We'd still like to raise a couple of concerns. I haven't heard this year the concern that we heard time and time again as this bill has been heard over the past 9 years that I've been dealing with it, and that is that we need to cover people who don't have coverage right now. And Section 6 still says that this bill covers people who have coverage but doesn't mandate that you get coverage if your district doesn't offer it. So that flaw, which is a major one, still sits there. The other point that I would just make is that there's an attempt to try and pay part of the MCHA assessment. We know that Education Minnesota has heard that plea that we've had. We had a long discussion about MCHA, and I won't go into all those details, but this proposal locks in the MCHA assessment at the rate that they calculate that people are paying currently. I would just remind the committee that if you take a look at the materials that MCHA handed out to you, 10 years ago, MCHA was losing about $49 million a year. This year, it's losing $150 million a year. I'd love to be able to lock in my losses at MCHA, and so would the rest of the health plans, at the rates currently in this bill, which is May 1 of 2009, never have them increase again. That doesn't seem to us to be fair. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you've heard a great deal of testimony today. I won't prolong those. We will continue to work with Senator Dibble and want to try and figure out how we can work to resolve the problems that are here. But as I'm kind of fond of saying in the healthcare arena, be careful what you do. It's not the money, it's the money. And that's the problem that we have before us with all of healthcare, not just with this bill. Mr. Chairman, members, if there are questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time.
Certainly. Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
The MCHA rate, I don't think Mr. Griffin quite got that right, and, you know, I'll call him Mr. Stang. The point of how the premium is calculated is so that MCHA is held harmless, so that as folks come into MCHA or come into the plan, you know, they remain, you know, they pay an MCHA the way they have in the past. And I do think there is a provision for the premiums to increase proportionally over time and not just lock them in.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to be corrected by counsel, but as I read the provision in Section 6, I'm sorry, Section 10, 11, in making the losses, the association's assessment against the school insurance premium must be based on premiums received from school employers on May 1st, 2009. And that locks it in at a date certain. Every year, those assessments have been increasing. And they've been increasing dramatically. So if you lock them in at a date certain, they aren't going to increase moving forward.
Is she here?
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's an attempt here, and it's been similar to what Senator Betzold's carried in his bill, to hold MCHA harmless for at least some period of time based on current situation. But I think Mr. Griffin has a point in the sense that in a dynamic insurance environment 5 years down the line, we're not sure what these premium bases will be. And this does, in some measure, attempt to lock it in as of a date certain.
Mr. Chair,
Ms.
Mr.
Gruber. I can't see what.
She's here.
She's behind the sign.
Maybe she could help us a little bit, too.
Maybe we can move some of the signs, too, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
That's what it's doing.
Thank you.
Ms. Gruber?
Mr. Chairman. My name is Lynn Gruber. I'm president of the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. I guess I would ask Senator Dibble or whoever drafted the legislation to tell us what the intent is. I will tell you that the way that our assessment process works is that we generally assess a couple times a year. We can assess as many times as we need to, but one of the purposes for our assessment is not just to cover the losses from the previous year, but it's to give us cash flow for the year that's going on. So in terms of assessment, the board has gone into a process now where we assess quarterly. So what we do is in the December part of the year, we estimate what we think the plan's revenue will be in terms of premium and what we think the losses will be in terms of claims. We project that. We build a budget just like the state does. And this past year, we were able to estimate that of our $150 million estimated losses for 2009, we are going to assess four times in four quarters. So I didn't write the bill. I'm not sure what this means, but I would argue that we've been here many, many times, and we've said the same thing, which is if the school districts want to pool, we're not arguing that. What we are arguing is the fairness of it, that MSHA is a statewide organization, and should they, as a self-insured organization, put limits on their annual benefits or their lifetime benefits, and they go over that, where do you think they're going to go for coverage? They're going to end up in a Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. So I'm not going to try to interpret what my friend Mr. Griffin thinks might be a date certain. We don't want to see any assessment locked in time, but I guess since I have the opportunity, I thank the authors of the bill for at least indicating that they will pay the assessment, but I think it should be at the rate that everybody else pays.
Scooper, thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as I'm reading this, I guess I would read this differently. The way I read this, it's not saying that the premiums aren't going to be reevaluated every year just like everyone else. What it says is that they're going to have to pay if on May 1st, 2009, you're talking about a school employer that was receiving health care coverage from a contributing member. So I think what that means is that as of this date, if they provided health care premiums or if they provided health care for their members, they're going to be a part of the group that has to pay this MSHA test in a continuing way, just like everyone else. That's how I would read this.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Mr. Johanson.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I think you read it exactly right. We have worked very carefully with your colleagues in the Senate over the years to make sure that we neither hurt MSHA or the Health Care Access Fund by reducing the aggregate contribution of school employees, but by the same token, we have agreed that we wouldn't enrich them by increasing the aggregate contribution of school employees. You know, right now, if we were to pass this bill, I believe we would be the only public self-insured pool in the state that would make any contribution towards either of those two funds. And so we aren't trying to dodge our tax obligation. We're trying to set an example of being a good public citizen and help to support these important funds, but not at a rate that's higher than we're currently doing.
Johanson, Senator Olson? Yes, Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, just looking line for line, if you look where the commas are and we're on May 1st, 2009, that isn't modifying the premiums. It doesn't say based on the premiums on May 1st, 2009. It says based on premiums received from school employers that on May 1st, 2009, were receiving health care coverage. So what that's saying is if they were paying this, basically, if they were contributing as of May 1st, 2009, then they have to continue to be doing that. But it doesn't say at a rate on May 2009. Does that...
Yes, Senator Olson, I'm having trouble with...
It's been struggled.
It's not very,
very
clearly
phrase,
worded.
The very last, we're receiving health care coverage from a contributing...
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
If we need to be slightly more artful in our language, we certainly will as we move along.
I'm a little, yeah. Senator Dibble,
enjoy Mr. Griffin's support.
Just by that very last part, I track all the way, and I think I agree with Senator Olson's interpretation that on May 1st, 2009 has to do with
the point at which we come in.
Right. They were providing it at the time that this went into effect. But
Madam Chair, I do agree it's confusing. You know, it probably could be clearer.
I think.
So the intent, Mr. Johanson or Senator Dibble, is that the premiums would... they were paying premiums before. They will continue to pay, and they will be, and they'll be subject to those assessments at the same rate as other entities.
At the same rate, Madam Chair, in proportion to those who were paying, who were assessable and were unassessable at the time of entry, and it's that proportion that stays the same. But as the MCHA assessment increases or decreases, our contribution would float at the same rate as everybody else's. And we agree, over the years, this probably has been one of the more difficult concepts to reduce to a understandable sentence that we've struggled with. So we're certainly willing to work with anybody and everybody to make it more understandable, to make certain that it's clear, its intent is clear.
Mr. Hanna, I'm not criticizing your drafting here or whoever, but it gets confusing, and as you have acknowledged, so I don't know that we can do that right here.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I just remind the committee, the way that our companies that are contributing members are assessed, they have to file every year. We give them 5 months. So in May of the year, we're looking to see what their premium was, all the premium they collected in the previous year. It seems to me that formula still works very well, and that what is on the page here is an internal thing that the school districts have to work out with the health plan. Because if we are able to measure what the premium was for a calendar year of the organization that is insuring them, that's what we look at. Now, whether or not one teacher, you know, got insurance because they were hired later or something like that, that's not for us to decide. We are the formula that you folks created back in the 70s has worked well for 33 years, and I don't see how that formula needs to be changed because of the fairly microcosm type issues that are raised here. So I would say to keep this bill going and to keep it simpler, take that section out. Because I really think it complicates the matter. Thank you.
Ms. Gruber, thank you. Senator Dibble?
I think the idea, I think there's some risk in that approach, because I think possibly as these folks come in, they'd be bringing in a lower amount of premium because some were accessible and some would not be. So I think MCHA is in better shape under this approach.
Well, perhaps you could, Ms. Gruber, would you work with them to get this? Are we having a substantive disagreement? I think it's just technical.
Madam Chair, if I may, I frankly don't understand the language on the page, and I don't want to say here that I understand it and that we can negotiate, because I don't understand. I think what I had just told you is the way it is, which is this is a very complicated section that doesn't relate to how MCHA collects its assessment. We assess based on all the premium that is collected by an organization in a 12-month period of time. It's the same period of time for everybody. It's a calendar year. And then we allow that organization 5 months to report it to us. We, under the auspices of the Commissioner of Commerce, we send out a survey, and they are to put down how much premium did they collect, did they pay. And that is what we will assess based on where they line up in the organization's ranking of who in the state collected the most premium. And right now, you know that it's Blue Cross Blue Shield, Medica, Health Partners. You know, it's our losses are distributed in direct proportion to market share. And that principle could apply to this, as I understand it. I don't mean to be...
Madam Chair, I think
Senator,
we have some... We know that there's a lack of clarity. We've established that. We could go with this approach. I think we'd be happier. Admin would be happier. I don't think Linda Berglund would be happier, though, so we'll have a conversation outside of this committee.
Okay, Senator, well, yeah, I think we need to do that because I'm having trouble. I'm really stumbling on it myself. But I think the intention is that you continue to pay the assessment, but in proportion to how many of the members were paying assessments before this plan goes into effect.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Madam Chair.
So I do understand that. Okay. Are there any other questions? Is there anybody else that wanted to testify? So What is the member's? I don't see this going anyplace else. Nobody else has asked for this. Doesn't Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I'm just, because of the MSHA component of this, does this have to go to Senator Berglund's committee or not?
Well, I think maybe it should, but
I'm sorry, Senator Dibble,
we don't have a request for this anyplace else.
Correct.
It couldn't be that members, you know, feel they've heard it.
It could be. I would be surprised if Senator Berglund was not interested in this. You know,
right.
So
shall we assume? Is that okay? Because I think
I would be.
This
I would
piece
be more
be
comfortable
there. Senator Dibble, this piece,
yes.
specifically, should
right.
be worked out there. But
right.
It should.
Right. So
before you get to the floor.
Yes.
So, Senator Olson.
Well, so would it be appropriate to make a motion to recommend this bill to pass then, and then refer it to Senator Berglund, or just refer it to the floor and she could request it if she wants it, or how would that work?
No, I think we might as well just straight up refer it so it doesn't slow it down, because I think, I don't know how other members feel, but I think that some of us think it should be there for that, for the clarification of that piece. And it's certainly appropriate to make the motion.
I'd like to make that motion then, Madam Chair.
And I don't think we had any amendments.
Madam Chair, I have no amendments.
So Senator Olson moves that Senate File 915 be recommended to pass and re-referred to name the committee for me.
Health and Human Services Budget Division?
Health and Human Services Budget Division.
I think it's to finance, and then it goes to
It will go to finance. That's, yes, I'm sorry. So that, are there any other questions or discussion? All those in favor? Senator Sparks, this is on a motion to pass and re-refer it to finance, which would then go to Health and Human Services Budget Division, okay? So all those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Thank you for working on that part.
You bet.
And Ms. Gruber, thank you for your direction there. Senator Dahl, is this a five-minute bill?
Sure.
No, but we might as well start. I think we can be here for about 10 minutes. Actually, I don't think anybody comes in and uses the room, but some of us have other committees, and I know Senator Prentner Solon chairs one, so. Where'd he go? Senator Dahl. You have Senate File 797.
Yes, Madam Chair. I do have Senate File 797. And let me just give you a little bit of background on this particular bill. We actually had some discussion here in the last 15 or 20 minutes about some of the concerns that school districts, teachers might have in terms of getting their insurance from the service co-op. So we've already had started this discussion. To be honest, if Senate File... one we just passed, 915. If that particular bill passes, then this actually will be not relevant, not too much relevant. I just want to give some further background. I'm reading here a report from the Office of the State Auditor, and you don't have it, from when Patricia Anderson was our state auditor in June of 2005. And the state auditor conducted a review of the contractual practices of eight service co-ops, and they provide 700 entities, including school districts, with health care insurance coverage, and at that time it was 59,000 employees. They go on to say here that by using the negotiating process that accrues to larger purchasers, these co-ops are supposed to reduce the cost of providing employee health insurance. However, the auditor found for some of the co-ops that the use of consulting contracts, diversion of administrative fees, use of vendor payments for lobbying expenses, underfunding of reserve accounts, and entanglement with their current carrier may be preventing some of those co-ops from fulfilling their statutory purpose. So I'm going to have Mr. Johansson in a second here go through the main parts of the bill, and there's six or seven parts of that bill. But in finishing the lengthy Office of the State Auditor's report, they made these key recommendations, and again, that was in 05, that all consultants should be required to fully disclose any contracts that they have with co-op vendors or other related parties, that administrative service and any other health insurance fees should not be diverted to non-insurance uses, and all transfers of insurance funds should be reflected on the cooperative's financial statements. In addition, the reserve should be independently monitored and maintained at adequate levels. The cooperatives need to better track claims data and other components of the reserve funds. The public should be permitted access to financial information pursuant to the Minnesota Data Practices Act, and they also recommended ways to increase competition during the insurance carrier selection process. They feel that that should be further explored. So I think we might call my bill the Transparency or Accountability of the Co-ops Act. And again, I think I'll let Mr. Johansson maybe give some details of the particulars of the bill.
Mr. Johansson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Johansson. I work with Education Minnesota. And the bill that's before us now is really a response to the state auditor's report that Senator Dahl referred to, and also the experience that we've had over the years in observing and monitoring and watching the operations as they interplay with the members of Education Minnesota and school employees throughout the state. And so we are looking at a bill that we believe addresses concerns and holds the co-ops to an accountability and a transparency standard that that the auditor called for when she made her report. First, I draw your attention to lines 2.18 through 2.22. What this does is requires that the Department of Commerce actually look at the book of business that's done by the co-ops and actually give a report on that. We've been looking for Department of Commerce, evidence of Department of Commerce oversight, and we've been unable to locate that, and we believe that that should be transparently available to all of our members. Secondly, in lines 2.31 through 3.5, we have here a provision that requires that the competitive bidding process be just that, and it would exclude people from serving as consultants with service co-ops who have relationships with the very providers that they're recommending that they do business with. And in doing that, we say that if you're going to be a consultant on the decision-making process, you can't have had a business relationship with one of the vendors that you're placing with them for the last 5 years. And again, the auditor's report had indicated that that there was a relationship between consultants and supposedly competitors. Then as we go through the bill, we come to lines 4.2 through 4.10. What this does is gets at a question that was raised in the previous discussion. We believe that employees' insurance premiums should go to pay for the cost of claims and for the cost of administering the insurance plan. This is consistent with the auditor's recommendation, and as we heard from testimony earlier, that's not the case. Now, one could argue that it's really a small amount, perhaps, that's siphoned off to fund non-insurance costs, but nonetheless, they are non-insurance expenses that are paid for with our premium dollars. And it really doesn't matter whether the claims funds are separated if the remainder of the premium dollars aren't separated. And so we believe that that's an important protection for the members. Then finally, on lines, or not finally, one more area on line 419 through 424, we have a provision in here that requires that the bidding process be done in a manner that gives members time to think through and consider rate changes and proposed changes in coverage. All too often we find that the bids that come to our locals for next year's plan are issued within 2 or 3 weeks of the end of a school year, when people are busy trying to get their grades done and do inventories and all of those other things, and they're told all too often that they have a week to decide, or maybe in a good case, 2 weeks. It was alluded to the idea that members walk with their feet and that there were 54 bids that came in. I was at a meeting in Chisholm last year in the middle of May when about 20 of those locals got their bid. And it was impossible for them to analyze them and do a serious job of determining whether or not they were getting the best amount for their money based on the information that was given to them. So we think that we move this bidding process up so they have 90 days to examine it. They can look at their options. They can look at their opportunities and then make that competitive process real.
Mr. Johansson, yes. I know Senator Scogin has a question.
Well,
and both Senator Olson and I have a committee meeting to go to. You may also.
That's maybe my first question, Madam Chair.
I think you may have another section or two to just tell us about, but Senator, so we're not.
Yep.
We're not obviously not going to vote. We're not really going to take further testimony today. But I know I wanted to say to Mr. Gross, I'm assuming the department would the department be speaking to this if we continue? No? Okay. Okay.
The bidding process, as I was saying, needs to be moved up so it can be people can look at it in a timely manner. And then finally, there's the issue of reserves. Oftentimes, our members are told that if you leave this pool, your district has X thousands of dollars in your insurance reserve, and if you leave, you will lose that. And as a matter of fact, the executive director of one of the co-ops told me last fall that they weren't charging any administrative fee this year because one of their districts had left, and they were using that reserve money to pay everybody else's administrative fees now. We believe that if it truly is a local district's reserve that's truly backing up that local district's insurance, and if that district leaves the pool, that reserve money should go with the district. If it's not, if it's a reserve that's there to shore up the stability of the entire pool, then it should be accounted for in that manner. Then it should be accounted for the entire district's pool, and then there wouldn't be any kind of implied threat that if you leave, you're going to lose something of value, and everybody would understand that on the surface. And finally, along that line, the last item is a reference on the very end in lines 526. And it's really, I want to point out, the first section is dealing with the Minnesota Statute 123A.21, which is the service co-op statute. The second one deals with Minnesota Statute 471.617, which is a regulatory statute. And this says what will happen to the reserves if, in fact, they do come back to the district. And what we're proposing here is that if a district receives reserves coming back to them, that in fact that reserve money should be used to pay insurance costs of those people who actually put the money into the reserve in the first place. So both the district and the employees would get the advantage of that reserve money if it did come back going towards paying for their insurance until it was exhausted. And that's the nuts and bolts of the bill. I appreciate your time. If there are any questions that we can deal with quickly, I would attempt to answer.
Mr. Johansson, yes. I just wanted to ask Mr. Stang something you pointed out on line 33 of page 4. You think that there needs to be...
Yep. Madam Chair, I think there's a misreference in the bill on line page 4, line 33, and I've discussed this with House Counsel as well, that reference to 471.61 should be 617, I think.
I believe that's correct, and as a matter of fact, I was communicated with House Counsel on that, and I assumed that that correction had been made. So
we're going to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, right. Senator Dahl's going to move to make that correction.
Yeah.
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails. So then Senator Dahl, we're going to lay it over, and we will take it up first. Pardon me? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. When are
second
we?
Second on the agenda.
Second on the agenda, excuse me, on Thursday.
Thursday.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And to others who have come today prepared to testify, I'm sorry, you'll have to come back. And I don't know, Mr. Gross, if you, it does reference the Department of Commerce and the Commissioner, so you may want to speak to that. And I know there's, where you have testimony from another perspective, you know, from the service co-op's perspective. So, members, then, with that, until Thursday, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.